So you're probably wondering, you know, why are those birds up there, Derek? You know, this is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. What have birds got to do with unleavened bread? Well, hopefully that's got your attention. And that's the aim. I want to introduce you to these amazing little birds. These are bluebirds, for those of you that don't recognize them. They are bluebirds, the male and the female. Actually, the female on the left-hand side, the male on the right-hand side. Yep, the male's got all the blue color. The female also has, but it's a little bit more subdued. So I want to introduce you to these little birds. And I'd like to tell you a story about a particular couple of bluebirds that just recently, well, when I say recently, the beginning of spring, we really started noticing them, moved into a tree, a little bluebird house on a tree, right in front of our kitchen window, on the edge of a wooded area. So between their little place and our kitchen window is, about 20 feet away. Now, I want to describe their behavior, their traits as bluebirds, their characteristic traits, and the pattern of, the pattern of behaviors that we've been observing. Because, you know, at this time of year, what we're doing in the Passover and Unleavened Bread season is we're examining ourselves and we're looking at our own behavior traits, aren't we? We're looking to see and identify sin, and we're also looking for patterns in our lives. You know, every time this happens, then I'm tempted to do that, and then this is the result. And sometimes we get caught in recurring patterns. So, you know, at this time of year, we want to not only look for, okay, what are the sins and get them out, we want to look at what leads to those sins. How can we avoid ending up in those sinful situations? How can we flee from them? How can we get further away from them and really make life a lot easier for ourselves if we can recognize those kinds of situations, those kinds of problems? So, as we describe the behavior patterns of these birds, let's be thinking about what lessons can we learn about the behavior of bluebirds and the similarities between what they go through and what we go through. Now, you know, we know that we're not in the animal kingdom. They are. They've got bird brains, literally. We've got human brains, and we've got hearts and minds that operate at a completely different level. You know, we're destined to be part of the God family. God has designed us in His image. Birds and animals, you know, they're on a different plane. But there's so many lessons in nature, and I'm sure you've all seen it over and over again. I think God wants us to really, from time to time, look at nature and derive some lessons for ourselves. So, as we go through this, ask yourself the question, am I just like those bluebirds? Am I just, you know, we look at the bluebirds and we think, man, what a bird brain. And you think, okay, well, sometimes you look at yourself and you think, I've done it again. Where was my brain? Where was my brain? So let's use this opportunity to sharpen our understanding of human nature, of Satan's temptations, and sinful behaviors that are so hard to overcome. So hard to overcome sin. Especially if we try and do it on our own. Before we get started on the story, just a few pointers about bluebirds. This picture here, this is the eastern bluebird. There are, of course, many different varieties. There's the Western bluebird. I don't have a whole list, but there's a bunch of different ones. This is the eastern one, and they are typically the ones that you'd see in North Texas. So the two that made their home in our yard, they are the eastern bluebirds. They're a small thrush, basically, that fall into the class of thrushes. They're brilliant blue on the back and rusty blush on the breast. They like open ground, and turns out that's perfect because on the other side of our house is a big pasture. Open ground, perfect for them. They love it there. They feed on insects and berries. And the most important characteristic of what they eat is mosquitoes. These guys are my friends. From the time I saw them, I thought, I love you. I'm so glad you've come to take up residence. Because last year, it was the first year that we were residing at our current home, the mosquitoes were just insane. I've never had so many mosquitoes decide that they were going to eat Derek, you know, all day long, ever before in my life. So when I saw these bluebirds, I said, you are wonderful. You're so welcome here. I love you. Bluebirds consume about 12% of their body weight every day. This would be the equivalent of a 200-pound human being eating 24 pounds of food every day. These guys eat a lot. And my hope is a lot of that is mosquitoes. The equivalent of it's often catching insects and bugs on the fly. They like the open ground, as I mentioned earlier. A few bluebirds can keep the mosquito population around your home to a minimum. So when I was reading this about them, I thought, yes, I love these birds. Both the father and the mother bluebird feed their babies insects and fruits every 10 to 15 minutes. Talk about a demanding kid. 10 to 15 minutes, you've got to be there and you've got to be feeding it. Both of them. Full-time job. Full-time job. Although 68% of a bluebird's stomachs are made for eating insects, they collect higher than 68% of insects during the nesting season because they need more protein in this period. So, amazing little birds, very industrious, always rushing around doing things and doing what I believe is the most important thing, killing mosquitoes. But of course, in the reality of things, that's not the most important. The most important is feeding their babies. Feeding their babies. You know, that's the circle of life. You've got to keep the next generation going and going and going. Otherwise, they're gone. There's no more bluebirds left. So, here is the story of our two eastern bluebirds. Once upon a time, there were two bluebirds, a male and a female. We'll call the male Boris Bluebird, and we'll call the female Bernadine. So Boris and Bernadine decided one day that they were going to start living in the Strauss's yard outside their kitchen window, about 20 feet away from the window, in a beautiful little bluebird box that the previous owners had put up and that the Strausses were delighted with. Things started wonderfully. The relationship between the Strausses and the bluebirds couldn't have been better. But then the Strausses decided that it was time to replace their windows. You see, the place that they bought needed a bunch of renovation, and the old windows were terrible. And they really even weren't worth cleaning because they were so messed up and old. So the Strausses ordered new windows. And when eventually, because of the supply chain being so interesting, when eventually the windows were delivered to their property and the workmen started, it was probably about a couple of weeks before the start of spring. The workers completed the job, brand new windows were installed, everything looked gorgeous. The next day, Boris Bluebird went off on his usual flight.
It helps if you switch it on, Derek.
There you go. Okay. So we're in the first day of the new windows, and Boris, as his custom is, he's setting off to go and do what he should be doing, finding insects and mosquitoes amongst them, and whatever else that he needs to bring back for his family, because when you go close to the bird box, the bird house there, you can hear little chirping baby bluebirds in it. And they're already saying, come on, give me that food, every 10 to 15 minutes. I know that's what they were saying, because I'd read it in the book. So that's how I was able to translate the chirping into what they were actually saying. So off he goes, like a good bluebird dad. Bernadine's staying back there, waiting for him to come back, so that she can then go out and do her hunting, and then they keep swapping backwards and forwards. We'd been watching them do that prior to this. But along the way, and that's, you know, that's how they kind of take it in turn. One comes in, the other one says, okay, my turn, and then they shoot off. But on this particular day, Boris sees the window. And he says, hello. Who are you? Are you me? Are you someone else? Who are you? If you're me, aren't you beautiful? If you're someone else, are you a friend? So he sits there and he taps against the window. And the other bird taps back. And he goes a little bit over to the other side of the window and he taps again. The other bird taps back. He says, is this antagonistic behavior? Is this a foe? It can't be me. Maybe it is me. I don't really know. I'm going to fly away and then I'm going to come back and see if he's still there. So he flies a little way away from the window, comes back again, and he's there again. Is it a foe? Is it me? And this behavior continues for maybe an hour or so, after which he gets really frustrated, and he is determined now, this is a foe. And he's very territorial. He doesn't want anyone else messing with his turf. You know, this is on the other side of this house, that whole pasture is mine, no one else's. That birdhouse is mine. Bernadine is mine. Those chicks inside there are mine. So you're unwelcome, and I'm going to protect, and I'm going to attack. So he starts not only tapping, now he's starting to peck. And then he goes away a little bit and then comes forward and tries to scare the foe with his wings. And he gets really close to the window and he smacks against the window, leaving his oily streaks all over the window, this beautiful window that used to be so nice and clean. And the attacks continue the whole day. Meantime, Bernadine's sitting back at the nest there, saying, "Hey, where's Boris? He should have been back a little while ago. What's going on?" So she goes and tries to check out what's going on, and they sit there and they go to each other, and then they start taking it in turns to dive bomb the window. And the Strausses are looking on in dismay. Initially, not because of any concern about the birds, because our peace was broken. the noise on and on and on, hour after hour after hour, driving us crazy. What were we going to do? The Strausses had no idea. Maybe they'll get tired of it. Maybe they'll learn their lessons. Maybe they'll, you know, lose interest. Maybe they'll go back to being bluebirds tomorrow and do what bluebirds should be doing. Maybe. Let's hope. The next day, as soon as the sun comes up, Boris is there again. This time he doesn't start gently. No, he's convinced that there is the enemy, and he's going to win today. It's a repeat pattern. But now, because Bernardine knows about it as well, they're taking it in shifts. So he's going at it, and then when he gets a bit tired, he goes back, and then she does it. And they go on and on and on, and this goes on for days. The Strausses do what every human being does in a situation where they have trouble and they're trying to figure out what to do. They consult Google. And Google tells them all about the habits of a bluebird. And this is what they find on Google. Google says that there are two common reasons that bluebirds tap on windows. Well, when the Strausses read that, they said, this is the understatement. It's not tapping on the window, it's attacking the window. But Google goes on to say, they are seeing nature reflected in the window. That's the first reason. They're seeing nature. Well, yes, I think probably at first that might have been what Boris saw in the window. He saw nature, and then he saw himself. Google goes on to say, if a bluebird keeps tapping on your window, you should step outside and try and view the window to understand what the bird might be seeing. Perhaps they're specifically tapping at certain times during the day when the sunlight hits the window and reflects nature more clearly. If a bluebird mistakes a window's reflection for nature, he might tap on the window out of interest or fly into the window by mistake. This is just one possibility. However, if you're having a bluebird consistently and aggressively tapping on your house or car window, it may be a territory issue. A territory issue. Well, the Strausses pushed the first reason aside because they recognized that that was not certainly the pattern that the bluebirds, Boris and Bernardine, had settled into. They had settled into an aggressive pattern. So the second reason that Google gave them was the bluebirds are seeing themselves reflected in the window. Bluebirds are naturally territorial when it comes to their own species. Eastern bluebirds in particular don't like to nest within 100 yards of another eastern bluebird pair. Ah. So, he saw himself 20 feet away, and he thought it was another bluebird. The cheek of this other bluebird to muscle in to his territory. 100 yards is at minimum that imposter should have dared to come. If bluebirds see themselves in a window, they may attempt to tap, scratch the window with their feet, or even dive bomb the window to get rid of the rival bluebird. While window tapping might seem harmless for bluebirds, and here's the thing that the Strausses really started feeling terrible about when they read this. It might seem harmless for the bluebirds. It could lead to exhaustion for the birds, and it means they're spending valuable time pecking at a window when they could be finding food for themselves or their young. Plus, the tapping can become quite annoying for you as the homeowner. See, we were focused, the Strausses were focused on that second one, annoying for the homeowner. But actually, if you think about it, it was really, really harmful to the bluebirds. Really harmful to the bluebirds. Both Bernadine and Boris had been preoccupied with our windows since the start of spring, and they hadn't given up. Day after day, the same behavior, over and over and over again, every minute of every day. What were those babies eating? Nothing. They need food every 10 to 15 minutes. They were maybe getting a little bit, but not every 10 to 15 minutes, and not what they should have got. And the birds were exhausted at the end of each day. For sure, they must have been. What they were doing every single day, the energy they were flinging at the window, would have exhausted anyone. So Google then decided that it would help the Strausses to figure out how to fix this. So Google said, one of the things you could do is close your blinds. Well, the Strausses ran to the other side of the house where they've got some blinds, and had a look at what was going on. And they found to their horror that the bluebirds were not only attacking that window, but there was definite evidence that they'd gone all the way around the house, because they were sure that that bluebird was somewhere inside this house thing that they were sitting next to. And sure enough, every time they came up to any of the windows, there was the bluebird again. So they attacked every single window, even the ones that had the blinds on them. So the Strausses said, okay, well, Google's useful sometimes, but it's not terribly useful on that point. So they looked at the next one. The next point that Google said was reposition flower pots and plants outside to block the bluebirds' access to the windows. Well, that's a fairly expensive thing to do. You've got to buy the pots and the plants and put them up there. We didn't have any. So we thought, well, maybe we can come back to that as a final solution, perhaps. The third thing that Google said was try a yellow highlighter. I nearly said a hello highlighter. A yellow highlighter, there you go. Try the yellow highlighter trick. What you do is you get a yellow highlighter and you draw, on the inside of the window, you draw a grid, vertical lines, horizontal lines. And that is supposed to, on the exterior side of the window, be something that the bluebirds will pick up, but it'll only vaguely visible to the human eye, but very visible to a bluebird's eye. So we thought, wow, that sounds pretty cool. We rushed out, bought some yellow highlighters, and then we read on, and Google said, well, you know, this doesn't last terribly long. You have to keep on cleaning the window off, and then doing it again, you know, every couple of days. And we thought, well, that's hard work. I mean, we've got to do 8 windows around the house. It's crazy. We'll be just doing yellow highlighters on our windows all day long. Can't do that. So as the Strausses were contemplating this quandary of what to do, the male Strauss, i.e. this one here, remembered something. Remembered that our previous house, we'd installed some... we'd bought a rubber snake, and we'd put this rubber snake right where a pair of doves, pigeons, were trying to nest. On the side, in our eaves, we put this rubber snake there, and it solved the problem. So we thought, well, Google's not terribly helpful. Why don't we just go with our experience with these other birds? So we rushed off, bought a whole lot of rubber snakes, because, you know, we were convinced this was going to work. put it up there on the windowsill on the outside, you know, nice big snakes that looked really threatening, made sure they were all curled up and ready. And guess what happened? The bluebirds were startled. And they stepped back and they thought, well, okay, what's this? Should we attack? And they stayed away for about a day or two. And then they started getting braver because they saw the snake's not moving. This is a trick. So they went a little bit closer, and sure enough, the snake still didn't move. And so they went back to their old habits. Now, to add insult to injury, what they decided to do, now, as you can imagine, these bluebirds, as they're busy attacking all the time, they're not only, you know, leaving marks all over the window from the way their wings are smacking against, leaving these oily marks everywhere, but they're also doing what birds and animals do all the time. Poop. All over the window, all over the windowsill. So now they've figured out that these snakes are nothing to worry about. So to add insult to injury, when they redouble their efforts, what do they do all over the snake? Yes. All over that snake that we bought. No respect. And they're back to their original behaviors. Back to their original behaviors. I'm going to stop the tale, the story, at this point, and we'll come back to it a little bit later. So, hopefully you've got a picture of what's going on. And you've got a picture of a pattern that developed. A pattern that developed, a pattern that was halted at one point, but then went straight back to it. And as we said when we started this, at this time of year, we're interested in patterns. We're interested in situations that create the opportunity for sin to get in. We're interested in situations because, you know, Satan's very subtle. He starts with one thing, which leads to another thing, which leads to another thing, and then he's got us. Understanding those patterns is so important. So let's reflect on this. And there are a number of different aspects. Hopefully, as we go through this, you'll think, oh, yeah, that's... You could think of this whole behavior pattern as so similar to human behaviors and human propensity to sin, humans being tempted and ending up sinning. And hopefully you can start applying it to yourself. You know, as I was... looking at their behaviors and thinking about it this way, I was thinking, man, I am just like them. I've fallen into similar behavior patterns. I've repented of sins. I've gone back and started sinning again. The same sin. And then I've repented again. And then the next day, I do it again. And sometimes it's because I haven't thought about what led up to me doing the sin. Maybe I should be thinking of what happens on the front end before sin and then changing that, deliberately changing what leads up to me making the decision to sin, getting away from that situation. I think all of us battle from time to time with sins that just keep recurring, and we can't seem to get out of it. No matter how much we cry out to God, no matter how much we genuinely repent and try and change, we get stuck. We find ourselves back there again. Sometimes it's regularly, like every day it'll happen. Other times it might be a year later or 2 years later, we find ourselves doing something that we hadn't done for 2 years, but we're back there again. Now, God is a fantastic Father, and Jesus Christ's sacrifice is a wonderful thing. But we really have to break the patterns with the help. So let's talk through a couple of key aspects here. Let's look at 1 Timothy 4, verse 1 through 2. Now the Spirit expressly says that in latter times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons, speaking lies in hypocrisy, and having their own conscience seared with a hot iron. You think about recurring patterns. Recurring patterns where you believe a lie. It says here, speaking lies in hypocrisy. This is what Satan does. He gets us. He lies to us. He's the father of lies, as we know. He lies to us. And if we swallow that lie, hook, line, and sinker, it's the same as our consciences being seared with a hot iron. That means that there's no ability for our consciences, which is the way that God speaks to us very often, is through our conscience, through that still small voice, through him pulling on our heartstrings, through him, you know, communicating with us that way. If that is broken off and destroyed by a hot iron that sears through that conscience, that it cannot be contacted by God, that's a problem. So the fact that, you know, the analogy being the birds again, they don't learn because they don't have a conscience. They don't have a conscience that anyone can talk to and say, hey, you know, you were doing this for the last 5 days and you didn't get anywhere. And by the way, you're neglecting feeding your kids. I'm just appealing to your conscience. It's like, okay, well, we don't have one, so we're not going to change. We're going to do what we do, and we're going to keep doing what we do. Does that describe us ever? Have we ever said, I don't want to listen to my conscience. I don't want to listen to God pulling at my heartstrings. I don't want to listen to him with the still small voice. In fact, I'm going to make such a loud voice for myself and make so much noise around myself that I can't hear the still small voice. And because of that, we end up doing the same thing over and over and over again, just like Boris and Bernadine. The second point, lifting a sentence right out of what Google said there, just to kind of reinforce this. Google had said, when bluebirds persistently tap or strike your windows in an aggressive manner, now this is the point, they may be interpreting their own reflection as another bluebird. They may be interpreting falsely, right? False interpretations of what we see. You know, if the bluebird could interpret that correctly, that, hey, that's me, and this is a stupid thing that I'm doing, that would be a breakthrough, wouldn't it? Do we sometimes look at a situation and falsely interpret it? Maybe someone, another brother or sister in the church, looks at us a little bit funny or says something that's a little bit abrupt, or maybe their tone of voice is slightly off kilter, and we look at that and we interpret it as, oh, I'm offended now. Whereas there was no such ill feeling in that person's heart in their interaction with us. Nothing. But now we're offended, and now we've got to get even with that person based on false interpretation. The bluebird has a false interpretation of the reality, and it leads to a lot of futile activity that hurts the bluebird. Do we ever have situations where we interpret something wrongly, falsely, and then we take decisions in our actions which are negative actions, and we waste so much time, and we have sinful thoughts about the person that we believe has offended us? We're going to get even with them. The other thing that's important here is the third aspect I want to talk about is negative effects on those around us. Negative effects on those around us. You see, Boris was the first one to attack. But pretty soon, Bernadine came along and Boris went and chatted away to her, and she decided, well, Boris must be right, you know. I'm going to go and attack that bird as well. No, this bird looks like me, but I'm going to attack it anyway. Bernadine joined in because of Boris. Now, we could say that if Boris wasn't there and Bernadine was the first one, she probably would have done that and then he would have joined in. But the point is, one of them started and the other one came along. Doesn't that make you kind of think a little bit about Adam and Eve in the garden? One of them started, the other one followed along. Sin often will happen in one person's life, but it's infectious. That's why the whole idea of unleavened bread and yeast. What does yeast do? It spreads. Yeast spreads. Negativity, sinfulness spreads and causes others to sin around us. The fourth point I want to make here is the unforeseen, unintended consequences of sin. Do we see the harm that it is causing to others? You know, if we're struggling with a sin, and we're just looking at it from our own perspective and the harm it's causing us, that's one way to think about it. But to really motivate us to stop the sin, to stop sinning, if we start thinking about the consequences of our sin on those around us, that puts another whole dimension into our thought process very often. So often when we're obsessed with an imaginary issue or something that sometimes we have misinterpreted, or it may be actually real, we don't realize how much we are neglecting the things that we should be focused on. Where do you and I spend our time each day? Do we get so distracted that we stop doing the things that we should do? And we all know what those are, don't we? We know that we should be praying, studying every day. And the example that we set, I'm sure you've seen it, that your loved ones, if they see you spending time studying and praying, it's an encouragement for them to do the same thing. Your behavior sets the example, they follow on. Sometimes when your behavior falls off and they're doing it, you're influenced by them. But so often we as human beings, just like the birds, follow a way that seems right to us at the time, without us thinking any further. Proverbs 16, verse 25. Proverbs 16, verse 25. We know this scripture really well, don't we? There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. There's a way that seems right. Have you ever had that? Where you've thought, in your own human reasoning, that's what I need to do. And you haven't consulted God. And you realize, after you've taken a couple of steps in that direction and banged your head into the brick wall, I should have consulted God. I shouldn't have done what on face value looked like the right thing to do. Just as Boris Bluebird, on face value, that was something he needed to attack. But literally, for him and his family, pursuing that forever, without stopping to think maybe there's a better course of action, is exactly what that second half of the verse says. The end of the way that seems right to a man is death. Not seeing that we're harming ourselves is a big issue. I mean, just take, for example, sexual sins. Sexual sins. The Bible specifically calls that out as a specific example of this, where often we don't see that we're harming ourselves. 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 15 through 17 says, "Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them members of a harlot? Certainly not. Or do you not know that he who is joined to a harlot in one body is one body with her? For the two shall become one flesh. But he is joined to the Lord is one spirit with him." So instead of being joined to God, being tempted and falling into sexual sin is what's being described here. Continuing verse 18 through 20, it says, flee sexual immorality. Now this is the important point here. Every sin that a man does is outside the body. It appears to be, I'm sinning, so it's outside here. Every sin that a man does is outside the body, but he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. Sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? For you were bought at a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. So that section there really drives home the point that sin harms the sinner. You know, that's just one example of a sin, but every sin really harms the sinner. You know, getting angry about something, walking around, that's harming you. That's harming your physical state. It's not harming the other person. You know, when you get offended by something and now you're walking around stewing about the offense, the other person's walking around, normal day, da-da-da, everything's wonderful. You know, but you're stewing. Sin hurts the sinner. But so often we don't realize that. Boris didn't realize it. He was so obsessed with smacking his beak against and his wings against the window over and over and over again. He wasn't thinking, hey, I'm going to get really tired of doing this. I'm going to be exhausted by the end of today, let alone if I do this for several weeks in a row. He wasn't thinking that. Another aspect to think about, brethren, and you know, this is just a list of of learnings, really, of looking at the bird's behavior and thinking about parallels with us. So this is just a list of things that I'm going through. It's pretty much in random order as the thoughts were coming, as I was looking at this bird and thinking, I'm that bird. And then thinking, you know, the scriptures were coming to mind as we were going through this. The next one was change. We're called to change. God says, examine yourselves, find out where the sins are in your life. I'll help you. I'll, you know, use the Bible. And by the way, another interesting parallel, the Bible is what? Kind of the mirror, isn't it? We look into the Bible, we see ourselves. You know, Boris was looking into a mirror. He saw himself, but he didn't see himself. Do we pick this up sometimes and read over things that we really should be stopping and pondering on and saying, you know, that verse there, it describes me, and I need to do something about it, and then asking God to help. Looking into the mirror and using that wonderful opportunity to have this mirror to really act on what we see in it, as opposed to imagining it's something else, like the bird did, and glossing over the fundamental truth of looking at yourself and seeing yourself and all your flaws. So, going back to what I was saying, change. Change that we are called to is not just, okay, let's change that for today. No, it's permanent change. Let's make that change. Let's get that sin out of our lives and keep it out forever. Permanent change is what God wants us to do. Now, on our own as human beings, we know we can't do that. We need God's Spirit to help us. But the point is that it's permanent change he's looking for. So in James, if you look in James, the first book of James, James 1 and verse 22 to 25. James 1, 22 to 25. It's talking here about being doers of the word, not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. See, again, you know, if you look in the mirror and you gloss over stuff, it's often because you're deceiving yourself. You're delusional. You think, that doesn't apply to me. That applies to that person, that person. Oh, yeah, and that person that offended me, it applies to them. But it doesn't apply to me. Nah. James is saying here, if you're a hearer only, you're deceiving yourself. And then look what he says in James. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like, watch these words here, he is like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself and goes away and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. And of course, we know that where it says what kind of man, it could also be what kind of woman, right? So what kind of a human being with human nature and all the craziness that we have in us. He's like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. He observes himself, goes away, immediately forgets what kind of man he was. What kind of man am I? That's what I've got to ask myself. What kind of man am I? And ultimately, it comes down to, I'm Derek Strauss, and I'm a sinner. That's what it's going to come down to. Continuing on in the next part of this, but he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it. See that word, continues. It's all about not just a one-off. Okay, I repent of the sin. Sorry. No, it's, are you going to continue that now? Are you going to continue to never do that again? With God's help. But you know, we're human. We know we're going to slip and fall. God knows that too. But our intent should be, that's it. I'm not doing that again. When with God's help, I'm going to really persevere to see this thing through, and we're going to make progress on it. So the bottom line on this point, brethren, is, you know, we need to not fool ourselves into thinking that we're a listener when we're anything but. Letting the word go in one ear and out the other and thinking, well, this applies to someone else but not to me. We need to think about it personally. Is it me? And then act on it. And act on it in a way that will take us in a different direction, the right direction. Act on it so that we literally stop dead in our tracks, turn around 180 degrees, and then launch off in the way, which is the way that Jesus showed that we should live. The next point that I want to mention here is something I think I've kind of covered already, which is becoming distracted and losing sight of what our main job should be. What should our main job be as Christians, as people that have been given the opportunity to be part of the first fruits? Our main job every day, is to draw closer to God, to be active Christians, to be putting sin out of our lives. It's not only once a year during unleavened bread, it's every single day. To rededicate ourselves to God, to re-surrender to Him every day, to repent every day of the nonsense that we did the day before, to become more like Jesus Christ and to follow in the way. See, Boris Bluebird, he'd forgotten completely about his main job. He got so distracted and so obsessed with something that he was so sure is correct, but it was completely wrong, that he neglected what he should have been doing. He wasn't fulfilling his purpose that he was created for. Why were you created? Why were you born? We've got booklets that talk about that, right? But personalize it. Think about it for yourself. Why were you born? What's the purpose? You individually. The next point that I'd like to talk about is self-talk. Self-talk. You know, those things that you say to yourself as you go through the day. Those voices in your head. Maybe that other people told you when you were a young child, that have stayed with you ever since then. Or maybe voices that came to you as an adult, other people have said to you, that left a mark on you, that wrote on the slate of who you are, that you repeat over and over and over to yourself. Self-talk. Those are the types of things that very often lead to us attacking ourselves. What was Boris doing? You know, he didn't realize it, but he was actually attacking himself. Sometimes we as human beings don't realize that we're attacking ourselves all the way through the day. We've got these negative voices. We're talking down to ourselves based on voices we've heard in the past. And we end up in a situation where under our breaths we're saying things like, well, let's use my name in this, right? But substitute yours. I perhaps do something really stupid that I've done before, and I say to myself, yeah, Derek, once again, when are you going to get this right? Come on. Maybe I even use stronger terms. Maybe I say, Derek, you're an idiot. Is that I'm attacking myself. If I do that every single day, is that right? You know, the Bible tells us that we should love our neighbor as ourselves. Not less than or more than or the same. It's the same as. You should love your neighbor. So what does that tell you? You've got to love yourself, right? So if I'm not loving myself, well, how am I going to love my neighbor? In Luke 10 verse 27 is where it actually says that. It says, you know, love your neighbors as yourselves. Of course, it's repeated in some of the other gospels as well. But, you know, it should mean something to us. It should mean something to us. So self-talk is another very important piece of the puzzle. Because if you're constantly downing yourself, then you know what? When it comes to sinning and recognizing that you've got a constant pattern of sinning, your approach is going to probably be, oh, you know what? I mean, I might as well just give up because I'm useless. I'm an idiot. I might as well just give up. I'm stuck. And I'm not going to make it. I might as well just call it quits. A couple more things to ponder here, brethren. A couple other key points. Seeing the splinters in others and not the log in our own, and attacking others. You know, we see our mistakes in others. We end up attacking their character, and yet we're blind to the fact that we're doing exactly the same thing. So this is a slightly different way of thinking about Boris attacking the reflection of himself. He doesn't see himself. He sees someone else that's doing wrong by coming into his territory. And he's imputing that motive to that bird. But he's not seeing himself. He's not seeing himself at all. He's not seeing the fact that he's not feeding his kids. He doesn't see that. Matthew 7, verse 3 to 5, talks about the fact that we sometimes see the speck in our brother's eyes, but don't consider the plank in our own eyes. Let's read it quickly here. Matthew 7, verse 3 to 5. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in yours? Or how do you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own? Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, then you'll see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. And you might add, if there's even one there. If there's even a speck in your brother's eye. Sometimes it's imagined. We often see our mistakes in others, don't we? And we've got a great example of that in the Bible. 2 Samuel 12, verse 1 to 10. And I'm sure you're already going there in your mind. This is all about King David. All about King David. 2 Samuel 12, 1 to 10. Remember, he had committed the sin with Bathsheba, and he'd sent Uriah into the depths of a conflict specifically to get him killed. And now he brought Bathsheba into his house. And Nathan the prophet comes to David, and he came to him, verse 1, and says to him, there were two men in one city. He tells him a story. He says, David, I'm going to tell you a story about two men in one city. One rich, one poor. The rich man exceedingly wealthy with many flocks and herds. The poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb which he'd bought and nourished, and it grew up together with him and his children. It ate food from his table, drank from his own cup, lay in his bosom. who was like a daughter to him. A traveler came to the rich man who refused to take from his own flock and from his own herd to prepare one for the wayfaring man who had come to him. But he took the poor man's lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him. What did David do? David's reaction. So David was angry. How dare that man do that? He said to Nathan, "As the Lord lives, the man that's done this shall surely die. And he shall restore fourfold for the lamb because he did this thing and because he had no pity." Isn't this so similar to the behavior of Boris and Bernadine? Both of them, angry birds. You know, you've probably seen the cartoons about angry birds. I mean, these guys were the angry birds for sure. Attacking this other set of birds that they thought were encroaching. Meanwhile, forgetting about looking after their babies. Not seeing their own sin, but seeing the other person's sin encroaching on their land, their turf. Completing the picture here with 2 Samuel 12 continues, Nathan says to David, "You're the man." That man that you just said needs to repay fourfold and then be put to death. "You're the man. Thus says the Lord God of Israel. I anointed you king over Israel. I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave you your master's house, your master's wives into your keeping. I gave you the house of Israel and Judah. And if that had been too little, I also would have given you much more. Why have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? You've killed Uriah the Hittite. You've taken his wife. A very clear example of how human beings can be so blinded and can not see their own actions, their own sin. Totally delusional, totally closed it off. Talk about, as we were saying earlier, having your conscience seared with a hot iron. I'm not even going there. I can't go there. My conscience is gone. Now, if we're going to conquer sin, all of these behaviors that we've been talking about here, these patterns are things that we've got to really look at very carefully in our lives. And this is a great time to do it during the days of unleavened bread, to really start thinking as we look into the mirror, to really see ourselves, not to see the reflection of someone else, not to be... have our consciences seared, but really to hear what God is saying to us by what we see. You know, eventually, we came to the realization, going back to our story with Boris and Bernadine, we came to the realization that the only thing that was really going to solve this was going to be to get the birds far away from our windows. At least, what did they say, 100 yards, Google told us? I think 100 yards away. Because then we're outside of their turf. Then they won't see the windows as a threat. They won't see the reflection as a threat. The temptation won't be there anymore. Now, is there a parallel for us? Getting away from temptation. If we hang out in places where we know there's lots of temptation, we're looking for trouble. But if we get as far away from it as possible, now we're starting to find a solution. Now we're starting to find a solution. There's a great example in the Bible about that. Let's look at this briefly as well, just to drive this point home. Genesis 39, verse 6 to 12. Story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Joseph and Potiphar's wife. So, verse 6, Genesis 39. So Potiphar left all he had in Joseph's charge because of him. He had no concern about anything but the food that he ate. Now, Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused. You know, even though, think about it, he's a young man. He's good looking. It must have really been flattering for him to have the attention of someone. But Joseph refused, and he said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house. He's put everything he has in my charge. He's not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything except you, because you're his wife." He's trying to get through to her. "You're his wife, not mine." "You're his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" See, he knew what it was. He identified it straight away. It's a sin. But she, of course, she spoke to Joseph. Notice this. Day after day. See, it doesn't stop. Satan's relentless. It never stops. But he wouldn't listen to her. But one day, when he went into the house to do his work, none of the men were there. She caught him by the garment, saying, "Lie with me." What did he do? This is where he really put into effect what we've talked about just now. Get as far away as you can. Get as far away as you can. What did he do? He left his garment in her hand and fled out of the house. He ran as fast as he could to get as far away from her as possible. Temptations never let up. Satan knows our weaknesses, and he'll continue to hammer away at them second by second, minute by minute, day after day, week after week, month after month, until he gets through, until he gets us. He won't stop. What we have to do, just like Joseph, is we have to flee sin. Flee fornication, it says in another place in the Bible. Flee. Get as far away from situations that lead to sin. And this is a good time of the year, brethren, for us to really think about those. Because there's the event, you know, when you sin. It happens at a point in time. But there's all the things that lead up to it. And a lot of that is situation dependent. It happens because of specific situations which come together, which eventually you're gone. You make a decision, and you make the wrong decision. In summary, brethren, we've seen two reasons why birds tap on windows. Boris and Bernadine did it initially because they mistook the window's reflection for the world around them, and they flew up and tapped away, and they were curious. Remember the other really good saying, curiosity killed the cat, right? There's probably some wisdom there too. Curiosity, let me just get as close to the edge as possible. I know that's sin over there, but let me get the closest I can to it. Curiosity, that was the first thing that led to the second reason, and the one that was the most engaging for them. Boris and Bernadine interpreted the window's reflection to be another bluebird, and they started striking the window to defend their territory. In a nutshell, brethren, like the bluebirds, we can often get distracted from our main purpose. Perhaps out of curiosity initially. Now, what does it feel like to think or to do or to feel things that are not aligned with the direction that we should be going. These detours in life can often hook us and lead us down rabbit holes, which provide experiences that lead us erroneously interpreting our purpose for living. We get so off on a tangent that we lose it completely. We forget about, I've been called, I've been given an amazing opportunity. We forget that. We end up chasing after things that aren't there. There isn't another bird in the mirror. We're chasing after something that's not there. They don't exist. We become fearful of our own reflection. Fear becomes mixed with anger. It drives us over and over again to the same futile space. We're stuck in a behavior pattern that we cannot get out of unless some external force steps in. So the external force in Boris and Bernadine's case is the Strausses. We have to go and take that birdhouse and move it to the other side of our property, far away, and remove the temptation. Hopefully, brethren, you've been able to think about and reflect on the fact that although we're not birds, although we are so much higher than the animal kingdom, we can behave just like a bunch of stupid birds sometimes. But we have a fantastic father and elder brother who knows that, who knows that we are weak. He knows, but he does want us to step up. He does want us to use the power that he offers to us. He does want us, as was said earlier, to take in the unleavened bread, have Jesus living in us, to give us that power to overcome. But there's a lot of things that we can do to overcome. If we just look into the mirror and see ourselves for who we are.